Welcome, Dumbheads, to MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. In this series, we're examining every single goddamn page of Alien Hunger, a quick start adventure for Vampire the Masquerade, to determine what is the dumbest thing on that page. Every episode is one page, every episode is short. If you'd like to play along at home, this is 1991's Alien Hunger, the official PDF release from White Wolf. Today we're discussing the back cover of Alien Hunger. It's the final day of covering this book, other than one wrap-up bonus episode, but it's the final day about a page of this book. We get the Alien Hunger logo from the front cover. We get some kind of little log line that says, quote, "A taste of blood, a taste for death," which I guess would come off as more dramatic and meaningful if it did not apply to literally any vampire story. It's like if the back said, "Alien Hunger, you dress in black, you got some fangs." However, the rest of the copy on the back cover is more specific about what we can expect from Alien Hunger. And this is my last chance to put on the drama voice, the early vampire, pretentious drama voice. So here we go. Quote, "Ripped from your comfortable mortality, thrown into a pit of blood and death, you strive with every ounce of your being to hold on to the last bits of your humanity, all while feeling the inexorable pull of the beast within." Somewhat misleading, given that the character write-ups for many of the pregens are like, being a vampire is great. You can't wait to throw away your shreds of humanity. But all right, basically so far so good. "A mile high where the air is thin." Denver content quota achieved. Now we get Denver Arts Council money. Perfect. Good job, everybody. Quote, "A mile high where the air is thin, an ancient genius has been snuffed out by an even older evil." A little clue there about the big reveal of Alien Hunger. Who is killed in this story? An ancient genius from ancient 19th century France. Quote, "Now you are alone, your old world stolen from you, and your new one most horrible to behold. And ruling all is your dread thirst." There it is again, my damnable thirst. I knew it would come back around. It's too damnable not to. Quote, "An alien hunger is a jumpstart kit for vampire." An alien hunger? Was the name of this originally An Alien Hunger? Anyway, what does Alien Hunger include? Quote, "It includes, colon, 5 pre-generated characters, complete with detailed backgrounds and personalities." Sure, that is true. I like these pre-gens, honestly. I didn't get a chance to say it in the course of the book because I was too busy being a jerk to this book and everyone involved with it, but for real, these are good pre-gens. Quote, "Source material for the gothic punk city of Denver." I mean, you did your best. Okay. It didn't have to be Denver, but given that it had to be Denver, you gothed it and punked it as hard as you could. Quote, "A complete adventure to guide both the storyteller and players through the transformation from human to vampire, in which they learn the true meaning of fear." You know what? This is a pretty cozy vampire transformation story, as those things go, isn't it? This is kind of like we moved to town and at first the neighbors didn't like us, but then we had a conversation and now things are cool. That's basically what happened. I mean, honestly, what's the worst thing that happened to us in this story? Probably the first scene where we were locked in that basement in the burning building. And that was an accident. That was a mishap. And all in all, I think, you know, the Denver community really banded together to help us get back on our feet after the first scene. Like, the people we had been kidnapped with were very supportive. After we escaped, that woman outside was very nice and offered to let us into her place to use her phone. Angel Tony reached out to us. The rest of the vampires in town were kind of mean, but then when we met Ed, he was like not only fine with us, but also like helped us get all our paperwork in order. Honestly, I am not sure after reading this book that I do know the true meaning of fear. I think I'll write DriveThruRPG about this, maybe get a refund, who knows. After that, we get the old school White Wolf logo with their motto, "A Renaissance in Games," at the bottom of the page, their address, barcode, and then over on the lower right-hand corner of the back cover, the dumbest thing on this page, some kind of pointy-eared character in like a button-down shirt, some kind of jacket, and like, at a glance, it looks like he has hair, but I think he's actually just got like a weird-shaped head. He seems to be a Nosferatu, and therefore, this character basically can't be any of the characters in this story. You know, unless this is Don Alonzo, I guess, like maybe the one character we had named but didn't get a description of. I don't know. This could not be anyone we've heard of. Total random stranger on the back of the book. This is a compound dumb thing. Number one, the fact that the illustration on the back of the book is a character who not only is not specifically any of the characters in this story, but almost specifically can't be any of the characters in this story. That does bring us, though, to the role, or rather the lack of a role for the Nosferatu in this story. The Nosferatu are one of the seven vampire clans. One of the strongest clans, I feel, in terms of what they bring to the game. It's a different experience from other vampires of the original batch of seven clans. They're like a vampire underclass. They have difficulty with the masquerade because they are clearly physically monstrous. And so they can't, you know, go out and hobnob with humanity. They can't have the kind of masquerade that others do. They have to kind of lurk around or use special abilities to make themselves appear human. But they tend to back each other up. They tend to be in the know, kind of thumb their noses at vampire aristocracy a little bit when they can get away with it. The Nosferatu are really cool. And not only are there no Nosferatu NPCs in this story, except for Thaddeus, who is specifically out of the city and out of the story before the action begins, but also, even though the character creation rules tell you you can play whatever kind of vampire you want, because Prester has blood available from whatever clan the player wants to play. So if you wanted to play a Nosferatu, you could just say, Pastor had a vial of Nosferatu blood, he used it, boom, your character's a Nosferatu. But it's not really as simple as that. What would happen if you tried to play a Nosferatu in this story? It is one of the seven core options presented in the core rulebook, which is probably all you would have had to play with at this point. And the book explicitly tells you you can play any of those options that you want. Let's think about what would happen. Scene one, you get kidnapped by Prester. You're still a human. Great so far. Scene two, you wake up in a fiery basement with all of the other kidnapped people. The mortals, Mavis, Mavis's daughter, Vince, plus the other player characters. And you have very obvious oversized fangs and white skin and a bald head and giant pointy ears. You're clearly a monster and everyone freaks the fuck out and doesn't recognize you. Obviously, everybody's still going to have to find a way out of this basement, but things are going to unfold much differently and may well involve you being attacked or split up from the group, either because they run from you or because, like, you want them to be okay and your presence is creating a problem. Because they're going to assume that, you know, because you look like a monster and they've all been mysteriously kidnapped and locked in a basement, that you're bad news. That takes us through scene three and into scene four. The sewers. Perfect. Natural fit for a Nosferatu. You sneak through the little sewer passage and you crawl up onto the street in the middle of everything where everyone can see you, and you're obviously a monster. You're supposed to be approached by a helpful woman, or if you won't kill her, then a mugger, neither of which would happen to an obviously monstrous Nosferatu just standing out there being bald and scary. Chapter 2, Life and Death. You all realize that you're monsters now, except for you, because you already knew you were a monster, because you obviously look like a monster. And also everybody saw you, so they should already know all about this. Scene 1 of Chapter 2 is the police investigation, where Columbo comes to question you. Only, how the fuck is Columbo going to stand there and calmly question a Nosferatu? He's good, but he's not that good. In Scene 2, Angel Tony approaches you and finally explains about the fucking masquerade. Good job, Tony. Just in time. After I paraded my hairless, chalky ass in front of the cops and the media, and all my friends and other vampires, earnestly just looking for help and like, what is happening to me? Someone please tell me why my face is like this. Now here comes Angel Tony to walk out of the shadows and be like, are you really so naive? You've never heard of a little thing called the masquerade. You guys are such dumb babies. And you, over there, you're a dumb and ugly baby. Scene 3, seek and you shall find. Time to go out and do some investigation. I think I'll just hit the local library. Do some research. Maybe I'll, you know, go to the home of a noted Denver stockbroker, Ainsley, whatever the fuck, and just sit down and, you know, have some tea and just have a little chat with him while he has a goddamn heart attack about the leering monster in his living room. Or I could go ask the neighbors. I just go canvass the neighborhood. Excuse me, have you seen a blonde man around recently? I need to steal his beautiful hair from my hideous head. Oh, I know, I'll go hit the streets and ask around about the Broad Street. Excuse me, do you know of any bars or clubs in the area? Preferably somewhere dark, like very, very dark, like I guess what I'm looking for really is some kind of subterranean tunnel, perhaps a crawl space where they have drinks. Heard of anything like that? Maybe hook a monster up. Anyway, while we're all busy with that, we start getting attacked by vampires while we're out there just doing our regular routine, our regular business. No indication of how that would work if you have to stay basically inside and out of sight all the time. Finally, we simply go to the Broad Street, have a conversation with Ed. I'll wear my Ben Grimm trench coat, cover myself up, it'll be fine. Then it's time for us to go on the offensive. Go to Dr. Liverman's house, Science Jaguar. Go chat him up about the secret experiments he's been doing. Ironically, he's one of the only characters who might actually accept and begin to understand what's happening if a Nosferatu approaches him because he's been studying vampirism, but we don't know that. And so the one NPC that my Nosferatu player character could actually talk to, I'm probably going to stay at home to avoid endangering the masquerade and spooking the Jaguar. But then finally, we go to attack Robert Klondike. To get the blood potions back, we have to sneak in and fight him, which is what Nosferatu are great at doing, sneaking, fighting, spying with animals. Thumbs up, this scene should go great. At that point, we'll recover the blood potions, when we will all make a very dramatic and character-defining, intense decision about whether our characters are interested in changing to another clan or getting rid of our vampirism altogether, except for my character, who, even though I, the player, want to play a wretched and cursed vampire, in character it would make absolutely no goddamn sense for my character to pass up this opportunity. So obviously they're going to stop being a Nosferatu, richly rewarding the Herculean role-playing effort it took to get through this goddamn adventure as a member of this clan. The dumbest thing on the back cover is the portrayal of a Nosferatu as though that's a thing you can really play in this adventure when you really can't. And it's a shame because this character looks cool. In another world, and preferably another city, I would play this guy. So that is it for Alien Hunger. I'm very excited to be done with the book, of course, but also to talk more about this book in a wrap-up episode, because I think this book has been an amazing mix of genuinely fun ideas and interesting characters, really bland shit that was hard to get through, stuff that just doesn't work at all, inexplicable decisions, weird rules stuff. This book had everything, and I cannot wait to talk about it. Join me next time for the wrap-up on MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. This has been Mega Dumbcast. New episodes drop every day except for Sundays, when all the previous week's episodes drop in one big megasode on the patrons-only RSS feed. If you'd like to get access to that feed and support the show, go to patreon.com/megadumbcast. Social media was never healthy and is now dying, so if you want to contact me, you can email me. I am megadumbcast@gmail.com. This season's theme song is Suck City by Black Math, whose work you can find at freemusicarchive.org/music/black_math. Dumbheads, I will catch you next time.